It's a sunny Monday here in West London. I'm Gab, he's Jules. I'm not sure it's quite as sunny over Neon, where UEFA are headquartered. Obviously,
loads of clouds everywhere.
A lot of clouds and a lot of rage as well. Righteous rage, they would say. But we're obviously going to talk about the Super League, the implications, the 36 hours that kind of have been shocking football and will continue to shock the game. We're also going to obviously go over the weekend. We had an FA Cup semifinal, two FA Cup semifinals, in fact. We had Barcelona winning the Copa del Rey. How about that? So we'll have all of that, but please bear with us because we have to talk about this thing that happened, which is huge. Quick timeline. On Friday, even before that, UEFA need to come up with a new format for the Champions League, which they have to agree with the clubs.
Under the pressure of the big clubs who've asked for it.
Yeah, they would need to come up with an agreement anyway, but obviously they've asked for certain specific things, and that's why you've heard us talk about the Swiss model, expansion from 32 to 36 and whatever. There's been a long and difficult negotiation with the clubs. The clubs are represented by the European Club Association, which represents 246 clubs around Europe. Its president is, or was, as of last night, Gianni Agnelli. If only it was Gianni Agnelli. If only he came back. No, it's Andrea Agnelli, who is also the president of Juventus. Yeah. On Friday, after fits and starts and threats of leaving and whatever, the ECA voted to back the UEFA Champions League reform proposals. And today on Monday, as we're taping this, in fact, my phone just flashed. Is it an update? Perfect. They will approve these changes. What's extraordinary is what's happened afterwards. There were rumors about this on Sunday. Story leaked, initially reported by Martin Ziegler in the Times of London. Then later, with a communique coming out from 12 clubs, 12 leading European clubs have come out and said that they're going to form their own Super League. They say they're not breaking away. They just don't want to play in the Champions League as it is. They're going to have their own format. They're going to have two groups of 10. They're going to play 18 group games, and then they're going to have quarterfinals and finals. And the key thing is they're going to run it themselves. They're going to run it themselves, which will enable them to keep more of the money. They say do a better job of running it, make more money. They say they're going to distribute solidarity payments, although that's a whole other thing we're going to get into later. UEFA very angry about this, saying we will fight them until the very end. All right, that's kind of I think those are the broad strokes. Yep. So it's a lot to get into. Jules.
I think it's a huge power play, which we expected because he's been in the soft pipelines for a long time. We talked about it many times on the show before. You've been very much within it with all the people that you know in clubs and at UEFA. So we kind of knew this was coming. But this time, as you said, it's more serious. They even have a website when they explain everything. Yeah. Clearly, some clubs resigning from the ECA. Andrea Agnelli resigning from the ECA as a president as well. So clearly, this is like, we don't
want anything to do with you anymore. Andrea Agnelli negotiates the deal on Friday. Mm-hmm. Andrea Agnelli, who, by the way, is historically very close to the UEFA president, Alexander Čeferin, negotiates the deal on Friday night. And then on Sunday, he resigns and walks away from it. On Friday night, when he negotiated the deal for the ECA, he already knew that his club was not going to be a part of this. That's just one of the things I find extraordinary.
It's extraordinary.
One of the reasons there's so much personal bile here. And Jules, UEFA released a statement on Sunday firing back, and it wasn't just a UEFA statement. It's a joint statement involving the Spanish League and Spanish FA, English League, English FA, Italian League, Italian FA. What did it say?
It said that if your clubs and your players take part in the Super League whenever it happens, then they could be banned from playing with the national team at World Cups and Euros. It could mean that your club is excluded from the domestic leagues, which means the six English clubs that have signed up for the Super League could be expelled from the Premier League. So you would have a Premier League without them, and they would have just basically the Super League to be played, which is between 17 and 19 games maximum a season. You know, what would their players think of that? Would their players agree not to play with the national teams anymore? Would they agree to only have up to 19 games a season and not play domestic leagues, not having that relationship with the fans on a domestic level? You know, the work with the community that a lot of clubs do all around Europe. All of that you have to think of as well.
that is kind of the huge nuclear option. But there's so much stuff that happened. I want to make sure that we mention it at the top, because we've also had politicians weighing in. We had Emmanuel Macron and Boris Johnson, two guys who's the British Prime Minister, two guys who don't always see eye to eye on many things.
That's true.
They've both come on. We've also had the European Union, European Commission. I mean, obviously they govern things. There's also issues with competition law there. We'll discuss all these implications, which was at the very basis of it, there is a different, I think, philosophical outlook. This is being driven by Florentino Perez at Real Madrid, by Juventus, by Manchester United, and by Liverpool, initially. It's not lost on anybody. Liverpool and United have American owners, very unpopular owners in the case of the Glazers. And there's also the fact that these clubs are saying, we have lost an enormous amount of money. We've been kind of bankrolling this and sharing things. We took a huge hit. We want to do this to make it sustainable. That's what they say. They say that if we can do this, then we can survive. The whole system can survive. Otherwise, we're going to collapse. I just want to ask you, are you surprised that, I know they took a big hit with COVID, but European club revenues doubled over the previous decade.
Yeah.
What's your attitude here? Do you have some sympathy there?
They wanted to do this before COVID, before the pandemic happened anyway. So please give us a break and don't go into like, oh, it's for us own survival when you're already the richest clubs in the world and you get even richer if this Super League happens. And if you stay in your domestic league, you'll be even the gap between you and the rest in all those leagues. So the six English clubs, three Italian, three Spanish, the biggest ones, will get even richer and the gap will get even bigger.
All right, Jules. And hello, podcast listeners. I feel like we covered a lot of ground. I might have missed something. People are going to have a bazillion questions. So we'll hopefully try to cover this here. Please bear with us. But we really think this could be, I mean, this is such far-reaching implications. But I want to get to something which I think is important, is the reaction. I don't think I've seen anybody at all in the UK react positively to this. I haven't had time to look at media in other countries. In Italy too, traditionally we've always assumed Real Madrid and Barcelona, and that in Spain they're more used to it, and so they're more in favor of it and whatever. But from a fan's perspective, one of the argument is that the fans would never stand for this.
Yeah.
I assume this applies to all the fans of the clubs who are left out.
Yeah.
But then the backlash in the UK anyway, at least on social media, and social media can be misleading, has been from fans of clubs who are involved.
Yeah.
And were you surprised?
No, I mean, okay, we know that England's,
like Gary Neville.
Yeah.
Manchester United's number one super fan.
Of course, and we know how important traditions are in England and in the UK, and football especially, and there's no problem with that. I think, though, we need to remind everyone that this Super League initially, or certainly the way those big clubs seeing it, and there's a lot of flows to it, no problem, but it's only a substitute for the Champions League. They're not happy with the Champions League. They want to create their own Champions League, let's put it that way, to keep it simple. And this is what they've come up with. So you can always argue that it's a closed league and this is unfair because there's no meritocracy. You can win your league and not being part of it, which is completely fair. But in terms of the fans' point of view, you still have your club in the Premier League or in Serie A or in La Liga. And then instead of having Tuesday and Wednesday Champions League matches, you will have Tuesday and Wednesday Super League matches. Instead of having your team sometimes play Ferencváros, for example, who you as a fan might not even be watching, you will have your club playing the biggest clubs in Europe every single week. So as a fan, I would watch it. I think as a fan, there's a lot of people who watch their team against Messi and Mbappe and Neymar and Haaland and Cristiano and all of that. However, I understand the backlash if it means that your team is out of your domestic league, which would not be good for anyone. And also, if your team is not part of those 12 founding members or 15 or the ones who are invited, then you're not happy because it takes a big chunk away of what you're trying to achieve in football, which is doing really well to then be able to take part in the Champions League.
I think, and we will get to this in a moment, I think we can agree that this is not viable if they are kicked out
Impossible.
Of their domestic leagues.
Even their own players would not agree to it.
And there's a lot to be said there, and we'll get to that. What I think is interesting, though, and look, there's an issue of format here, right? Because it's two groups of 10, and the top five of those 10 then go and qualify. You've got the top three go straight to the quarterfinals, and then number four in one group plays number five in the other group, and vice versa. What I wonder about is, you know, there is a distinct possibility that after five rounds, your team might be pretty much out of the running with no real shot of getting back to five. And then what happens? Is it still lucrative? Is it still interesting for you? Because one of the things in the current Champions League format, where you had four clubs but you had fewer games, that might have, you know, you can get knocked out in five, in match day five or six, right? I feel like you would just be having a lot more dead rubbers, and also a situation where once you've qualified for the next round, seedings, whatever, but, you know, there's so many great clubs, it's hard to tell. What happened? Oh, we're through. Let's go and play the reserve team in the Super League. I'm just not comfortable with this.
Yeah, no, you're right.
With this format. And, you know, one of the assumptions is always the fans have always brought up is like, oh, but because games against Barcelona and Real Madrid and Bayern are rare, that's what makes them special. That's what makes them valuable. If it becomes an everyday occurrence, it's not as valuable.
That's a very fair point as well. And you know, we always say, oh yeah, I remember that Chelsea-Barcelona game when Ronaldinho scored that incredible toe-poke shot from the edge of the box in 2005, six or something. But if you have those Chelsea-Barcelona every year, then it takes away, I think, a lot of the enjoyment and a lot of the memories that you have. I say, oh yeah, I remember I did this and I did that and I went with so and so. If it's every year, you're even going to get confused. When was it? Last year or the year before? Or the year? When did he score that goal? And I think that takes a lot of the pleasure of being a football fan.
And I think that's a good point to make, because look, the current Champions League format, with all its flaws, we actually don't get that many. I mean, we get a lot of heavyweight clashes, but, you know, I don't have the schedule. My memory isn't great. But like, I don't know how many other super clubs Bayern or PSG faced last season on their way to the final. I don't know. Remember who was in their groups or whatever. But generally, you know, you would say maybe two or three over the course of a season, which they get to the final. And, you know, they have to play 13 games to do it. That, I think, that's something to bear in mind. Mm. And one argument that people make is that, well, the football is so globalized, fans who go to the games and stuff might not be happy with it, but fans in the rest of the world don't care. I'm never quite sure. Like, are we kind of talking down to fans of the rest of the world? Are they that important?
No, but what you could imagine, and I think you wrote that in your piece, in your excellent piece on the website, is that if this Super League is run by the club and they can do whatever they want, they can easily take the last round of matches in Asia, for example, and play it all in the US. And you'll have all your last game for every single club is played, you know, in New York, in Miami.
I don't think there's any question that is part of the future plans.
So you get involved the fans of your club, of your league, who are outside of your own country, which
I think if I'm a fan of an already eliminated Manchester United playing against a Barcelona who've already qualified, and they're going to go and they're going to play in Singapore, and I see Brandon Williams and Axel Tuanzebe on one side, and I see, you know, Braithwaite on the other. Yeah. I mean, am I going to be
But you're still going to watch, because all the ICC games that we see in pre-seasons are full everywhere. That's where we have record clouds.
I would say the big difference, though, with the ICC is that the ICC comes 5 weeks after the end of the season. There is a bit of a desire,
right? You're right, that's true.
And the teams are physically there and they stay there. This would come kind of sandwiched in between league games. They would fly in, fly out. I don't know. That's a part I don't get. I want to get to one point which is still really unclear here, which is the participating clubs, right? So Florentino Perez, surprise, has been named chairman.
Yeah.
There's four vice chairmen. I'm going to forget somebody, but it's John W. Henry, Andrea Agnelli.
Malcolm Glazer.
No, Malcolm Glazer has
long
passed.
Joel Glazer. Sorry.
Joel Glazer, who never speaks, but delivered a quote for this. Yeah, that was nice of him.
Of course.
And somebody else who I don't remember right now.
Me neither.
There's no French and there's no German clubs in there. There's a bit of a story about why they're not there for now. And we take it as read that because they said it's going to be 15 founder clubs, that they're saving these three spots for these three other clubs.
Yeah.
Do we want to hazard a guess who those three clubs are?
Yeah, I think it's pretty easy.
So Paris Saint-Germain, obviously.
Of course.
But, interestingly, Nasser Al-Khelaifi, who was one of the two ECA representatives on the UEFA Executive Committee, the other one being Andrea Agnelli, who's obviously resigned from everything now. Not only, he hasn't spoken out in public,
not yet.
But on Monday, he showed up at the UEFA meeting, I presume it was by Zoom, but and he voted in favor of the UEFA Champions League reforms. Mm. So is he playing both tables? Is he...
I think it might be, and as we've been saying, this is a huge poker game anyway, certainly the start of it. For Nasser Al-Khelaifi, the idea of being part of the 15 biggest clubs in the world is very appealing. They make no mistake, this is where they want to be, this is where they believe, as PSG as a club, they belong. However, what is stronger right now is, one, the relationship they have with UEFA, and that Nasser Al-Khelaifi himself has with Alexander Seferin, the UEFA president, not just because he's on the Exco or because he...
Andrea Agnelli thought he... Ceferin thought he had a really close relationship with Agnelli,
true.
Too.
But with Al-Khelaifi, and we've known that for a long time now, but also because Nasser Al-Khelaifi is also the beIN Sport chairman.
Yeah, we should, again, for people who don't know, beIN Sport is a Qatari-based broadcaster, which, well, they're Qatari-owned, but that is his day job, right?
Yeah,
he runs that.
And runs
that is a much bigger company, no disrespect, than Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah.
And obviously they exist. They've got operations in a whole bunch of different countries, including France.
Mm.
And they pay enormous amounts in television rights to the Premier League, to the Champions League, to whatever. I think they may be the biggest rights buyers in the whole world.
Yeah.
So he can't be damaging the Champions League that he pays a lot of money for.
No, and he can't be damaging the relationship he has with UEFA over those Champions League TV rights. Rights that, by the way, he also sells for other countries. I mean, he's very much within this UEFA organization in terms of the Champions League. So for him, even if he'd wanted to say to the other 12, hey, keep me a space, I'm coming. This is very, very difficult for him to sort of break all the ties that he has with UEFA and with Seferin to just go and join this, you know, breakaway that could end up costing him more than what he's going to bring it to him.
So this is what makes me think this and what we're about to talk about next. Makes me think that the way they've gone about this, you know, take a step back. Let's say you're one of those people and you believe that this is good, you want to do this, or even you don't even believe it's good, but you think it's good for you, right? So it makes me think that these people have gone about it in a very cack-handed way. Because if you can't get Nasser's commitment, if there's still this half in and out and stuff like that, I don't see how that strengthens you. And then there's another aspect to it, which is the last two places, we assume, are held for the German clubs.
Yeah.
And we assume that it's Bayern Munich, who have been linked with this project many times in the past, and Borussia Dortmund.
Yeah, that's right.
So I was struck by Borussia Dortmund. They actually they played against Werder Bremen this weekend. They actually had a sign up which said, it's like, say no to, I forget what it was, but say no to the Champions League reform. But they're saying no to the UEFA Champions League reform, moving to 36 teams. I mean, their heads are going to explode.
Yeah, but even their shirt, they had a new shirt, which is an old school shirt that they had probably around the years where they won the old Champions League kind of thing.
It's a pretty cool shirt, by the way.
Yeah, very cool.
Already today, there's reports that Hans-Joachim Watzke, their CEO, has come out very strongly against this. The thinking that behind the fact that Bayern, and that's what I've been told, that Bayern and Leipzig and Borussia Dortmund haven't gone through with this, is twofold. One is the structure of German clubs, where there's 50+1, and ultimately it's going to come down to the club members' votes, and a lot, and those are fans. And it's going to take time. And it's going to be difficult to persuade those people, but also the fans in the street, the backlash. And right now, there's no fans in stadiums, right? But we saw what happened, right, when Hicks and Gillette were at Liverpool. We saw what happened, and then it petered out. But with the Glazer Out campaign and the green and gold and David Beckham gloriously picking up the scarf and everything, right? Fans can make life very, very uncomfortable for an owner,
completely,
and for the people running the club.
Completely. If you think about Barcelona and Real Madrid, who are also owned by the socios, you would suspect that they would have to vote in favor of this maybe new Super League. I mean, they work differently than the German club, but even for them, it's not a given.
So you sense a reluctance there, and you're talking about Germany. You're talking about, leave aside the Bundesliga, you're talking about the single, this is a commercial entity, right? Mm. Germany are the single biggest economy in Europe. They are, I believe, the third or fourth biggest economy in the world. Yeah. And the top three aren't in Europe. If Borussia Dortmund don't participate, who do you bring in? If Bayern are on the fence, and Bayern keep selling themselves largely in this whole traditional thing, you go visit Bayern, right? And they say, yeah, we have corporate this and Audi and whatever. But then they also say, look down there, we've got 6,000 fans who pay 200 euros a year for season tickets because we are a people's club. Mm-hmm. And we have all these other clubs that we set apart so that people might only be able to come once a year so that everybody can feel free. You know, this is a big part of their corporate messaging.
Yep.
Do they have the stones to go through with this? Who's going to come out? Is Uli Hoeneß going to come out and say, oh, yeah, this is good? Believe me? I mean, I don't know.
And also, can you have a Super League with just three countries? Clubs from only three countries? I mean, this is not
Super
League.
You can if they're, you know, really good countries.
But it doesn't matter.
Great food, Italy, Spain, great weather. Well, England, yeah. But no, I take your point.
It doesn't work as well.
That's where I think it falls apart. There were strong suggestions that Leipzig would, that if Borussia Dortmund, who I think are generally seen as the club most likely to kind of bottle it and pull away, that they could be replaced by Leipzig. Now, my thing with Leipzig is twofold. Number one, nobody likes them because of, you know, they're not exactly, if you're trying to win hearts and minds, this That's is not what you put forward because of their sponsor. And secondly, Leipzig is Leipzig. It is a deprived small town in the eastern part of Germany.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about global growth and an MBA model, markets matter,
no,
right?
I give you that, of course.
And then on top of that, Sky Germany and Fabrizio Romano reporting, as we're recording this, that they've already called themselves out.
Yeah.
And that is a corporate club, by the way. That is a club with pretend members and pretend fans. You know, that is a sponsor who decides everything
one
for
owner.
The club,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
One owner. So that, I think, is a really, really big blow. And again, you should have gotten your ducks in a row before you do this.
Yeah.
One other huge side effect, and I want to get your view on this, is that the clubs say that they want to play in the domestic leagues, but you're going to have a major effect here, which is that if they're all making so much more money from the Super League, if they play in the domestic leagues, the gap between the big clubs and everybody else is going to be even bigger, right?
Yeah, completely. I mean, JP Morgan, which is the big bank behind the project and the Super League, which is, by the way, where Ed Woodward used to work before, you know, like
many years ago.
Yeah, many years ago. He's saying between 4 and 6 billion, you know, this is whole thing could bring and clubs can have. And so certainly the richer will get richer. And that means the gap between them and the rest of the clubs in their own countries would get wider as well. It has to be, even if they, as they've been saying, they've got solidarity payments, which they call solidarity payment, and sustainability payments, which I assume is sort of trickling down some money back to the pyramid, trying to keep the idea of a pyramid. So smaller clubs from within their own countries and within Europe would get some money from this competition. I'm waiting to see that, by the way.
They say it could be up to 10 billion over the life of the commitment. Weirdly, in their document, it doesn't say how long the commitment is. Tarek Pagny at the New York Times has reported that it is 23 years. You see, that works out to about 450, 460 odd million a year in solidarity payments. But it's not clear they're going to go to who?
No.
How?
How
exactly? Is that going to move the needle around Europe?
Yeah.
They say it's considerably more than what UEFA redistributes. It's not really considerably more. It's considerably more than UEFA's current solidarity payments, which are about 250 million.
Yeah.
However, on top of those, what UEFA calls solidarity payments, UEFA also redistribute an additional 160 million to various football ventures around Europe, from FAs to the hat trick program to whatever. They make 60 million in direct payments to the Europa League and to the which ultimately all trickles back to the clubs, right?
Yeah.
And to the clubs that are eliminated in the qualifiers. And on top of that, there's the money that they pay out to the 12 worst performing teams in the Champions League, which is about $200 million, that is also money that then recirculates through the system. Yeah. So even that thing is a bit playing fast and loose with the numbers.
I mean, as we talk about money, there's a point where you can understand the clubs, those big clubs, are saying, hang on, how come the team that finished bottom in the Premier League, which is Sheffield United, having an atrocious season, are going to earn more money than whoever wins the Champions League this season? Which is true. In terms of prize money, it brings you more money to finish bottom of the Premier League than of winning the Champions League. You can argue that one is over 13 games one is over 38 games. So, but still, and that's one of the reasons why those big clubs are saying, hang on a minute, we are not being paid for what we bring to the Champions League as much as we're worth it. And say, okay, who is going to show those games in the Super League? What broadcasters, as we know, Gab, the TV money right now is not going to increase. It's more likely that it's going to decrease, right? Because the rights have already exploded. And then a lot of the TV channels right now who are showing either the domestic leagues or the Champions League are very much tied up with the domestic league. So take Sky Germany, for example, showing the Bundesliga. Would they really take a risk of angering the Bundesliga and the Bundesliga club to go and show the Super League? I don't think so. What would Sky in the UK do in England? Would they really take the risk of making the Premier League furious and breaking that 25 years relationship that they had with the Premier League to just show the Super League games? I'm not sure either. Same for BT Sport. So where is the money from TV going to come, and which channels?
That's a big ask. I just don't think in the current climate you can rely on TV rights to drive you, right? We saw it during the pandemic, right? We saw it during the pandemic. All of a sudden, when there's no fans, you know, the TV ratings sort of held up or whatever. But clubs can't survive off TV alone.
Yeah.
There's no question there. So that's a very good point. I think if these clubs in the Champions League are all earning more money, as we said, the domestic leagues are going to become even less competitive, right? The gap is just going to grow forever. There's the fact that based on the format, you would play a minimum of 18 games compared to the current minimum of games in the Champions League, which is 6. The maximum right now is 13 games in the Champions League. With the Super League, the minimum would be 18. The maximum would be 25. That is a lot more games in the schedule. That means no League Cup. It means maybe the domestic leagues having to go down to 18 or 16 teams. I don't know how you're going to cram everything in there.
I don't know.
That's a big question. The referees.
Yeah, who's going to referee? All the referees right now are under control by the UEFA, by FIFA, by the domestic federation. So
they have contracts. You would have to persuade them to leave and become full-time Super League referees.
Right.
Which I think is a really, really big ask. I think you might have some luck maybe with, you know, referees from smaller countries that are very good referees. That, you know, sometimes when you see, like, there's some dude from, like, Slovenia officiating a Champions League final or whatever, he may be a really good referee. He may not make a lot of money because he officiates, because he happens to be Slovenian, and refereeing is the one area where protectionism still exists in globalized football. Maybe you can convince a guy like that. But it is a tough ask. And you're also saying, well, then you're not going to be refereeing the Champions League final ever again.
Or the World Cup or the Euros.
There are legal aspects. There's a ton of legal aspects. And again, I don't want to turn this really boring, and you know my thoughts on lawyers. But it's news this morning. The Times reporting that they've already filed motion with a bunch of courts, and the Super League has, to try to preempt a hardline stance from UEFA, from governments. Where law is involved, we don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah.
But it's not a good start.
That's not a good start. I mean, imagine UEFA is excluding the teams right now from the Champions League. So Chelsea, I mean, this is good because PSG would win it, but no Chelsea, no Manchester City, no Real Madrid anymore. They're saying, you want to do your Super League? You're out of the current Champions League and you can't participate next season, for example, for the sake of it. Is it really worth it for those clubs to have a five-year legal battle that would cost them millions in lawyers' fees and court fees and everything, and have
and
no European competition for 5 years before they can actually play in the Super League?
That is a great point, and that is almost like a UEFA nuclear option. If UEFA were to kick him out, you even went further. What if they kicked them out of this year's?
Yeah, of this year's, and just go like, okay, PSG, you win it.
Oh yeah, just because maybe that's what Nasser hasn't signed
yet. Nasser is hoping for, like, hey, maybe there's a chance.
No, but even if they did it for next year's competition, I mean, it's hard to see them being able to put together a Super League quickly enough in time for next season, right? So they could play a bunch of friendlies against each other, I suppose, or some sort of pretendo competition. But that would be a huge hit.
Yeah.
That is one of the options available. I mean, I just want to go through, just to wrap this, the options available, how we think this could turn out. So obviously the nuclear option. Before I do that, I also want to mention FIFA in this. Because at the very start, and I wrote this, is FIFA is kind of triangulating between the big clubs and UEFA. They've done this for a very long time. It's a tight relationship with Gianni Infantino and Florentino Perez. They came out, they said they were disappointed. In the past, under pressure from the confederations, they've come out and they said, no, anybody participating in it will be banned from the World Cup. FIFA can't really ban anymore other than ban you from international football and make international transfers very, very difficult. Were you expecting them to come out with a stronger statement rather than just kind of like, we're disappointed? Because the conspiracy theorists are like, oh, look, you know, FIFA are secretly plotting with the clubs.
Yeah, and we heard Joan Laporta, for example, who I believe of all those 12 founders clubs, who was the first one to speak out on Sunday night on a radio in Spain, saying...
This is the other crazy part, by the way.
Oh, yeah. The Super League, well, it's all about money, but this should not be about money. You know, football means so much more and everything. And already distancing himself from this Super League that has just been created.
Yeah, just signed the document.
Yeah, just saying, like, there's other alternatives. For example, me, I'm more in favor of a huge club World Cup that you could have every 2 years, for example, more than this Super League idea that I'm not actually so keen on. And you're like, what? There's 12 of you already. One is almost out and saying, like, I would rather something else than just this Super League where everybody gets angry with blah, blah, blah. So, but maybe the angle from FIFA is, hey, we can do a huge world club World Cup where all of you here, those 12 members, 15 members, 20 members, you could come in, you could be there every 2 years, and you could still play in the Champions League, but we make sure that we organize this. Maybe there's somewhere for FIFA there to be in the background and try to manipulate in a way everyone to make sure that they also arrive to what they want and what would be good for them.
So from UEFA's perspective, they can ask the leagues to ban them, or they can go back to the negotiating table. If they do go back, I think the model is going to be something like we have with EuroLeague basketball, where there was a legitimate split. I think it was more than 20 years ago. There was a legitimate split. The big clubs left saying, if we're going to grow, we need to do this. They were banned from their domestic leagues for a year. I think they were banned from international basketball. The big difference between what happened in basketball and here is there's two big differences. One, FIBA isn't FIFA.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a lot. It's just a much weaker organization.
Completely.
Same
with the domestic leagues as well.
The domestic leagues were a lot weaker. And also there was no triangulation in the sense that FIBA ran basketball in Europe at the time.
Yeah.
And they also ran basketball globally. Here you've got FIFA versus UEFA. So that is one difference.
Yeah.
But I think the other big difference is that the NBA was around 20 years ago and it was the best league in the world. So they could make the argument, we want to grow to become the NBA.
Exactly.
This is the only way we can do it.
Yeah.
European clubs can't say, Bayern can't say, oh, yeah, we want to grow and become Orlando City one day. do you know what I mean?
Like, MLS.
It's a much tougher MLS. Sell. But that model, right, that model that they have in the EuroLeague where, again, I'll stick with what they've suggested, 15 founder clubs, other five clubs can qualify by different ways. Maybe it's by winning the UEFA Champions League or what's left of it, or the Europa League, or something, some sort of process for 1 year.
Just be invited, which some have been for 2 years or 3 years.
Yeah. Well, that's what they do in basketball, right? They give licenses.
Yeah.
It sounds like that is, for me, that is their only realistic scenario of pulling this off. And even then, it's going to be difficult because UEFA can simply slow roll them.
Yeah.
I mean, you touched upon this before. Never mind starting out the league. If UEFA puts pressure on the leagues, then the leagues write to them and say, you're going to be kicked out next year. And then it goes to legal challenges and stays of execution. You create more uncertainty. And what investors hate most of all, what the Glazers hate most of all, is uncertainty.
You're right. And just finally, because this is a big poker game, and I think we've tried to explain it to you really well, but is there one other options, Gab, of UEFA saying, okay, let's sit down again and one final time and maybe UEFA giving away more of their control and their power to those big clubs to maybe do a Super League but actually be the Champions League in a way. Do you see what I mean? Or you don't think it's just possible?
I think there have to be certain red lines. One is obviously automatic qualification.
Yeah.
The big thing, and the other ones, you can haggle over redistribution and the commercial company that would run it. But again, it's one thing for UEFA to give away sort of the commercial running it to the ECA on like a 51-49 basis. The ECA represents 246 clubs.
Yeah.
It is a broad base. These are the clubs who play in European competition. But to do it and give it away to 12 clubs or 15 clubs, that's completely different. That's a lot harder to justify. I would imagine that they could get back to the table, and logic suggests that in the end, compromises are always found, and it's easy to be cynical and say they always find a way. But to me, the one thing is that this was really, really personal for UEFA and for Sheffrin. There are people, and for the other clubs too, there are people who feel genuinely double-crossed.
Yeah,
Edwin van der Sar called an emergency meeting of the ECA on Sunday because he's like, what the hell? We believed you.
Yeah.
We went with you. Why were we here negotiating if then you're just going to walk away and blow up the whole thing?
Yeah.
There are people who feel deceived. And these are human beings with feelings, at least the ex-players who are running these clubs. It's going to be interesting. And what's also going to be really interesting to see is fans are coming back in the stadium in a limited way here in England before the end of the season. I think you might see, we've seen some in some other countries already. Is going to be their reaction. We know the Glazers don't care.
Yeah.
But I think Liverpool are the ones to watch, because those owners got so much goodwill from Liverpool fans. Liverpool see themselves as different. Those owners sold them on the idea that they were different, certainly different from Hicks and Gillette, respectful of traditions, whatever. There's a big left-wing angle historically to Merseyside.
Yeah.
If all of a sudden, you know, John W. Henry and Tom Warner and Mike Gordon and those guys, they're not heroes at Anfield anymore. If people start treating them the way they treated Hicks and Gillette, I think that could certainly prompt a change of heart. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. So, Jules, this would have been the news of the day, but sorry, Jose.
Sorry.
Jose Mourinho has been let go, has parted ways with
again
Tottenham Hotspur this time. Details are scarce, but the club have confirmed it. What we do know is obviously on Friday night, they drew with Everton. They are where they are on the table. I think they still had a shot at the Champions League, maybe not a great one. I'm surprised.
Are you?
In season with the League Cup coming up in a couple of days.
But surely you could
You want to save yourself on the bonus in case he beats Man City?
No, but you could see that it was just not working. I mean, they, without two mistakes by Everton defenders, they would have never drawn that game. And it's two Harry Kane goals again, but he saves them, and the mistakes by Everton saves them.
But is that a reason to sack Jose Mourinho when you have paid him? You've tied yourself into this enormous contract with him.
Yeah.
His payout is going to be... And I said this at the time.
At
the time that it made no sense to hire Jose Mourinho because of where they were. Not because Jose Mourinho's a bad coach or whatever, but because of where they were.
Yeah, you're right. And you were right. That's the surprise. The surprise is that they actually gone with this, knowing that it would cost them maybe between Jose and all his staff, which we're talking four more members of his coaching staff, this will easily be £40 million.
Right.
Right now, do they really have £40 million to spend? They must have really thought that the situation was so bad that they had to make this call, had to make this decision, and suffer the blow of one having to replace him between now and the end of the season. I mean, we know that Ryan Mason, their former player who was coaching the youth team, is taking over and will take training and will, I guess, prepare for the final at the weekend and the Southampton game in between. Let's not forget that they also have a league game in midweek. But things must have been really, really bad, Gab, for them to make that call right now. Because, by the way, just before I let you talk, the whole narrative of why Jose Mourinho is because he's a winner. He's gonna win us things. Well, he had a chance to win things for the first time since he arrived at the club, and he won't even have that chance because he's been sacked before the final.
What I find odd is that we've had periods when Jose was living up to his word. You know, he said that they would have finished second last year if he'd been there, right? Whatever, believe it, not believe it. But the numbers were there, right? You saw they finished the season strongly.
Yeah.
It just felt like they never kicked on. Now,
but they started strongly this season.
And they started strongly this season, too. So do we think it's a football reason? In the sense that they thought, well, his football's not working. Or is it a human relationship season? So with the criticism, you know, essentially, oh, what's the difference? Same coach, different players. Do we think maybe some breakdown with some veteran players?
Very true.
Is it both? Is it one? I'm trying to imagine who in the Tottenham dressing room could have the power and the clout to say, you know what, I'm not happy with this dude here. Like, it's not working. He's making me miserable. Is there anybody like that?
Yeah.
Harry Kane.
But not just him, I think. I think there's a lot. And certainly, Gab, I think when he's pretty much the whole dressing room, that's where, as an owner and as a chairman, I'm not sure how much Joe Lewis is involved in this, but certainly you say, okay, if it's one guy who's not happy and you say, well, because he's not playing much. If it's another guy, you say, okay, because the style of football is not the greatest, right, but we're winning. But if it's most of your dressing room, you think, okay, the problem is far bigger than just the style of football or difficult relationship there and there with players who are not too happy because they're not playing enough. And the problem is most of the dressing room was not on board anymore with Jose Mourinho, with his message, with his methodology, with his tactics, and with the mindset that he was setting the players. This is a team that lost 18 or 20 points now from leading position. This is a team that was not playing well. This is a team that were hardly working, attacking transition and training. I'm sorry, if you're those players with the pedigree they have, this is not good enough. That coach has not been good enough in terms of results and in terms of training.
There is a small part of me that really steps back and wonders, where did it go wrong? And I will hold my hand up. When he went to Manchester United, I thought, this is the right man, right club, it can work. And then it did. I thought he had learned from some of his issues. When he returned to Chelsea, I think a lot of the mess that was made was of his own making. I thought he made some huge mistakes, and that is what led to the end. I thought he had learned from there, from Real Madrid. Has he made the same mistakes that he made at United and at Chelsea? In other words, does he have a learning curve? I'm talking about the way he presents himself, the human relationships, as well as the football.
Yeah.
Or is this just more of the same?
No, you hit the nail on the head. Is that what you say?
Yeah.
The same. And it's what's funny is that this sacking comes only a few days after Paul Pogba tried to explain. And that's only Paul Pogba's point of view. We don't have Mourinho's point of view.
Oh my God, how could I miss this? Pogba got him sacked. It's Pogba's fault. Pogba got him sacked.
But Pogba explained how
twice Pogba got him sacked.
Pogba explained how they...
Bad Paul.
How they fell over at United, of Mourinho having this incredible ability of just one day being really close to you and then almost the next day, without you knowing why, being your worst enemy. And I think this...
Luke Shaw could talk about that.
Yeah, but not just them too. Yeah. Loads of players, including right now in the Spurs dressing room, where, oh, it all started well because Mourinho was all so charming and welcoming and warm towards them and, you know, and saying the right things every time and doing the right things, saying the right things. But as soon as things unravels a little bit on the pitch, he gets into that mood where he gets so moody and lunatic that those the man management skills just go out of the window.
So we don't get in trouble. When you say lunatic, you mean moody.
You're not
saying lunatic in the English expression, which means he's got mental health issues.
No. In the sense that one day you're happy, the next day without people.
I just wanted to clarify that, so we don't. I find it remarkable, and I think it's an issue of self-awareness and how you relate to other people, because there are so many of the same mistakes again and again, with a difference that at Spurs you're dealing with Daniel Levy. Who's not easy.
No.
You know, I thought at United, he had the run of the club and he screwed it up. Here, he didn't help matters in some of his personal relationships, but equally, he paid a higher price quicker, despite the fact that he had that ironclad contract. That is the part I find interesting. And I wonder now, what next? I mean, seriously, like where does he become? Is he viable again at a big? Is he viable again at a Super League club?
For me, he waits for Fernando Santos to retire from the Portugal head coach job, and he takes over, and that's it. He's finished at club level. There's no way anyone, not even in Portugal, or maybe just about in Portugal, let's say Porto or Benfica, and I'm not sure why Porto. What would Porto swap Sergio Conceição for José Mourinho? Benfica and Jorge Jesus, okay, because it's not a good season for them.
Well, he said he saw himself in club management at some point, and obviously this Portugal team, there's a lot of talent there.
Yeah.
What I wonder about Portugal, though, I mean, who knows? What you said before about being close to players and then turning on them or whatever. There's a gigantic elephant in the room. I don't know when Fernando Santos plans to leave, but whenever he does, I think it's a fair point that a certain Portuguese striker from Madeira will still be there. How does he deal with Cristiano? How does he? Well, seriously, because he had his many ups and downs with Cristiano Real Madrid.
As you said, they were ups and they were downs, but they were ups as well.
Yeah, that was 8 years ago.
Yeah.
But how do you deal with a Cristiano who is, you know, nearing the end of his career, feels important, is important, and you walk in, and he's more important than you. Yeah. Fernando Santos lets Cristiano do what he wants.
Yeah.
Right? Which, fair enough, he's Cristiano. But is Jose going to do that? Because if I'm the Portuguese FA, I'm like, why do I need you? If this guy's going to do everything, why do I need you? Can he repair the relationship with Cristiano?
Well, I think if it's in the interest of the whole country, of course he could. And let's not forget, this is not a daily relationship. This is 10 days in September, 10 days in October, 10 days in November.
Yeah, and then a month in Qatar.
Okay, but nothing until March. So they might be okay on that limited amount of time, every day.
That is a really good point.
Like at Real Madrid. But apart from that, I don't know who would in France, in Germany, in England, in Italy, in Spain, who would want to have him as a manager? It's just not working anymore. 10 defeats in the league this season with still 7 games to go. 10 defeats. He never lost so much. If now you don't believe that he's lost his touch as a really good manager, surely this season shows you how far behind he is of everybody else. Tactically, what have we seen? Oh, yeah, we have seen the Son and Ken relationship. That's not Jose Mourinho. That was there before, and that would be there on whoever takes after. They're just two amazing players who are just so good at playing on the counter and attacking transition. What else have you seen?
Eric Dier fulfilled. No,
exactly.
Okay. All right.
And then
Harry Winks.
Did he used to be so intelligent in his communication, his own communication, right?
He used to be the master. Yeah. He used to be the greatest.
This season, what did we have? Why didn't you bring Gareth Bale on? Oh, that's a good question, but I don't want to answer. Sorry?
Yeah.
Okay, why do you keep leading, you know, letting go leads? Oh, same coach, different players. What, having a dig like that at your players? Next question. You know, again, 18 points you've lost. Be in a leading position? That's a good question. I'm not ready to talk about this now. What are you talking about? Who do you think you are?
He's definitely lost that kind of stardust that he had in dealing with the media, which we sometimes overrate, but it's dealing with the media and it's dealing with the fans, right? It's how you present yourself.
Yeah.
He was idolized at Chelsea, not just because he won those two league titles, and obviously they hadn't won one since the 1950s, but he, you know, anything he said was like the most brilliant thing in the world. But it wasn't just because of the football they played and because they were winning. It was because he had it. He had that charisma. And when you start losing that, I mean, the only club, I can still tell you, the fans would take him back.
Don't tell me Inter.
That is that.
No, they wouldn't.
That is the only club where he hasn't burned bridges. Now, there's another guy there right now who presumably will burn bridges. I'll make this bold prediction now. I will invite you to a steak lunch. In the next 5 years, Mourinho will either be coaching Inter or Portugal. I give myself 5 years.
So. Okay, that's three years.
Next 3 years.
Okay, in the next 3 years.
Yeah, there you go. You guys are all my witnesses.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough Jose and his one-man protest against the Super League. No, I'm just kidding. That's not why he's gone. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Jules, it was all kind of overshadowed by the Super League announcement, but two of the Champions League semi-finalists did face off at Wembley. Your thoughts?
Chelsea beat Manchester City on Saturday afternoon in the first FA Cup semi-final. You're right. And while it's the fact that Thomas Tuchel has now beaten Pep Guardiola, Jurgen Klopp, Diego Simeone twice, and Carlo Ancelotti. All of those six games without conceding a goal. And I think that's pretty special. You can always argue that those teams maybe not at their best, etc., etc., that Guardiola rotated. It was a very good...
changes, though. Is that necessary?
I don't think so, but that's the way he went. He lost Kevin De Bruyne with an injury that could actually...
That's going to hurt.
That's going to hurt and prevent him from playing the first leg of the semi-final of the Champions League against PSG. So all of a bad afternoon for City and Pep Guardiola. Very good afternoon for Thomas Tuchel and Chelsea. Well done to them.
Last four games for Pep. The two Dortmund games, which could have gone either way. Leeds. Some weird refereeing. Leeds, they lost.
Yeah, it's not good. Jamal Musiala scores twice as Bayern Munich beat Wolfsburg 3-2 to take their lead at the top of the Bundesliga. Back to 7 points. Gab, this was a wild one as well, wasn't it?
It was, and I think this was actually really important because... Look, there were goalkeeping errors on both sides. Volt Weghorst, your man, scoring for Wolfsburg. But coming back after Champions League elimination, which, you know, you won the game, but whatever, still feels like a defeat, right? Because you're out. And you still have so many of your injuries. And you're playing Wolfsburg, who are third in the table.
Unbeaten at home.
And unbeaten at home. Mm. It's really important. Yeah. It's really, really important to go and get the result. Musiala started wide. I don't think that's his real position. I checked it. The guy only turned 18 years old in February. I mean, it's crazy. He's a reason to be positive. I stand by what I said. There's still a lot of work to be done. He's not going to be an automatic Muller replacement, and you don't want to put too much pressure on him. But he is a little bit special.
He looked great.
Now, after that game, Hansi Flick revealed what we already knew, that he wants to leave at the end of the season, presumably to take over the Germany job after the Euros. But Jules, were you surprised by the club's reaction? They put out a statement where they said they disapprove of his words and they're not going to discuss it with him until after April 24th. Is this necessary?
I don't think so. And they waited a day. So he came out straight after the game on Sky Germany or Sky Deutschland and said, like, you know, this is what I've just told the players. I've asked the club to
release me
from the 2 years that I still have left on my contract with Bayern Munich, and I've informed the club and etc. And then nothing for a day, and then Bayern goes like, "No, this is not good enough. We disapprove, and you're not going to say anything until the end of the month." And
it's
like,
really, the statement is hilarious, by the way, because also they keep calling him Hansi Flick in the statement, which is fine. But like normally with clubs, like, you know, you do it in the first reference and then second reference, you go by his first name or whatever. Yeah. I don't, unless Hansi Flick says, "Oh, you have to give me money to leave," then I would understand Bayern's position. But surely I would hope Flick just has a decency in saying like, "Hey, I'm leaving, cheers."
But this
is
Hasan Tamilalizic, who is obviously in a civil war with Flick, not happy. We know that Hoeneß and Rummenigge have one each in each camp, so they're also fighting over this. This is just this shows how dysfunctional right now the club is. And you know what's going to happen, though. He will leave. They will let him go. They cannot not let him go.
We're going to make the German FA go and pay them compensation.
But they won't. But they will let him go. They're too big for that. And then they would get Nagelsmann instead, and everybody would be happy in the end.
And Nagelsmann will win the inaugural Super League.
Yeah, probably. No, Cristiano Ronaldo as Atalanta beat Juventus 1-0. Gab, I can't resist the joke, whereby Juventus obviously need to create a Super League to qualify for a European competition, as they might not qualify for the Champions League through Serie A anyway.
Yeah, that's real original there, Jules. Look, they didn't play that badly, right? In this game, that's what's encouraging. Dybala started. Dybala's not ready. But then again, with no Cristiano, who else are you going to play? You got to bring him back at some point. There's no shame in losing to Atalanta with that performance. But it's really, really hairy now because Lazio have a game in hand and they're pushing behind. And Napoli's there. I think this is going down to the wire. And so it's more bad news and bad karma for Andrea Agnelli.
Yeah.
Mason Greenwood scores twice as Manchester United beat Burnley 3-1 to consolidate second place. Jules, what did you learn?
Nothing new, Gab, in the sense that at home again, United struggled a bit and they were 1-1 until the 84th minute. That Mason Greenwood is an incredible talent, but again, we knew that.
He's like a tremendous footballer. He's like, ridiculously good.
And he can play wide, he can play centrally. He started central and then moved when Cavani came on at halftime. This is just brilliant. And they certainly have a lot of momentum. Even
I know
if
you
at
like...
home, is more difficult than away for them.
I know you like to praise Oleg. Are we going to praise him for taking off Fred at halftime and bringing on Cavani and moving Pogba in a deeper position? Come on, show some love.
Yeah, I'll show some love and deserve credit. However, sat in front of my television, I thought this is exactly what should be done and what I would have done. I'm sure you did the same and a lot of United fans. So well done, Oli. But that was a kind of a no-brainer.
All right.
It was. On Saturday, Barcelona won their 31st Copa del Rey. They destroyed Athletic Bilbao 4-0. Gab, Messi had a 20-minute spell of incredible brilliance, especially his first goal. And my boy Antoine Griezmann, also decisive with the opening goal.
Yeah, I don't want to say this was Messi's best game of the season because otherwise some Messi-holic will come out like, oh, what about this? But he, when he just took over, he was just unplayable.
God, that goal.
What I thought was interesting about this was in the first... Athletic Bilbao went into the game deciding that they're going to park the big bus. And Barcelona had, you know, they had a ton of possession in the first half. And it was a typical thing where if it doesn't work out for you, the usual people come out and say, oh, look, too much possession. Tiki-taka doesn't work. It's so boring. Directness. But then when it does work, you tire them out, you move them out of position, you pick your spots, and that is how eventually they broke them down. They're fully deserving of that. If Unai Simon doesn't make some of those saves,
it's
something like that, especially the ones at the start of the second half.
Yeah.
No Luis Suarez, no problem, as Atletico Madrid beat up Eibar 5-0, Jules, to paraphrase Mark Twain. Were rumors of their demise greatly exaggerated?
Well, we'll still have to see, but certainly that was a big win for them. Huge for their confidence, the fact that they scored obviously so many goals, Marcos Llorente, Angel Correa, who in a very important game and role for him now that Luis Suarez is out, for him to score two goals. And overall, not many teams this season has beaten Eibar 5-0. Real Madrid won 2-0. Barca drew with Eibar 1-1. So
you don't expect Atletico especially to beat
exactly.
them.
Exactly. So good. They're going to fight. And they're not going to go down without a fight in this title race. So good for them. Because meanwhile, Gab, Real Madrid's walking wounded. I held 0-0 by Getafe away from home. But at least we got to see Victor Schuster play. Who would have said, eh?
Yeah, I knew this was coming because, look, Getafe are basically like Atletico Madrid on a bad acid trip, right? It's Bordalas, and especially now that they're under pressure and whatever.
Fighting against relegation, yeah.
And Real Madrid just emotionally clearly spent from the Liverpool game. And on top of that, Zidane said, all right, fine, I'm willing to take the risk here. And, you know, Kroos was on the bench, made a bunch of changes. Your boy Marcelo played. I knew you had to put in Benzema. But that's okay, Mariano's there. Mariano, come on, man. The Victor Chust, Eder Militao, central defensive partnership. It was a kind of draw that suits both teams weirdly. I think Real Madrid know that it's not these 2 points drop that are going to cost them the Liga title if they don't win it. So they move on to live again.
They could have lost that game as well because Getafe had a ton of chances.
12 fit players.
Yeah.
You know, it's the story of the season.
Yeah.
Talk about the wildest of wild finishes. How about Paris Saint-Germain and Saint-Etienne?
Wow. Nothing happened in this game pretty much until the 78th minute. Then Saint-Etienne take the lead and I'm like...
And by the way, this was after Lille held on Friday night.
Yeah. So this is a chance for PSG to come back just a point behind Lille. And then Saint-Etienne score and I'm like, no way. Are you kidding me? Are we going to throw this one away again? Then Kylian Mbappe takes charge and scores two goals. So it's 2-1 PSG. I'm like, okay, we're cruising now. It's all over. But no, 92nd minute, Saint-Etienne score again. And I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? My heart could not take it anymore. And then Mauro Icardi, Maurito, who's just coming back from injury, whose future at the club is in doubt because he will probably leave, scores a header after an amazing nutmeg and cross from Angel Di Maria to win 3-2 for PSG. This is the kind of game, though, that tilts you towards winning a title. And I think this was huge for PSG.
Angel Di Maria in fuego, by the way.
Yeah, in fuego. Meanwhile, he finishes 1-1 between Napoli and Inter on Sunday night. Gab, who will be happier?
Well, I don't think Napoli are going to be happy because I think they would have felt that despite the way the game unfolded, they would have felt that Inter is a team that they could have beaten.
But yeah, yeah.
I think both are happy they didn't avoid the defeat. From Inter's perspective, they could have put the lead, the league could have stayed at 11 points even. But like, they got back into it. They know they're going to win the title, and after they got the equalizer late, Conte again celebrates like a maniac because that's how he rolls.
Yeah.
Took a 97th minute equalizer from Eddie Nketiah, but Arsenal managed to grab a point against Fulham. Jules, I'm not sure what to say anymore. But they don't play in the Premier League, they just play in the Europa League, right? They're preparing for the Super League.
Yes, the priority is the Europa League, Gab. You know, this is what it is. Arteta made a lot of changes. They lost Lacazette to injury. It was not pretty at all. The inconsistency is dreadful.
Alba from his hospital bed.
Alba from the hospital bed. But hey, they move on. At least they didn't lose, which is a good thing. No Zlatan, but Milan managed to beat Genoa 2-1, though it did get a bit nervy at the end again for them.
It did. Now, look, you can look at there was a situation where they needed like two saves on the goal line from, one was from Tomori, yeah. The other one. But, I mean, look, they're showing that they can win without Zlatan. I think that means something.
That's big.
I think these players are growing. The big thing for them is not to somehow collapse and miss out on the Champions League entirely.
Yeah.
And they're getting it done. So in that sense, it was a big win. You know, the lead is 9 points. That's not going to change between now and the end of the season. But this was important.
Yeah.
The fans, well, at least 4,000 of them. Yeah. They weren't exactly fans. They were local residents. But they were back at Wembley for the other FA Cup semi-final between Leicester and Southampton. And Kelechi Iheanacho made all the difference.
It was good, Gab, to see fans again in the stadium, even if it still looked really empty.
4,000 to 93,000.
I know, but still, it was good. It was good. They were there with their mask in the sun at Wembley, FA Cup semi-final. And well done to Leicester for the first time in the FA Cup final since 1960-something. Well done to them. And again, that partnership up front that we mentioned before of Iheanacho and Jamie Vardy.
Yeah, Vardy kind of made his goal.
And yeah, he got a bit lucky, but hey, he scored again. A big, big goal for Leicester. Let's see how they fare in the final against Chelsea now.
Mm.
Sevilla come from behind to beat Real Sociedad 2-1. Gab, this is the victory that seals their place in the Champions League next year, right?
I think the gap is now 15 points.
Yes.
And so I think it's huge. Look, I mean, we've had our thing with Lopetegui. And
yep.
Sevilla might even, I mean, they're rank outsiders, but it's not over for La Liga either for them, right? It's what, 6 points?
6 points.
But I thought this was big because Real Sociedad are a really, really good side and they want to go down. They got back into it. I think Lopetegui's done some fantastic things
really
this year. And you know what? A bunch of people have done, which I think is kind of funny because I think it was actually Betis's social media account. They went and they published the official league table without the European without the Super League clubs, right? So no Atleti, no Real Madrid, no Barca, and it shows. Oh look, Betis is like, oh look, we're third in the table. Maybe not realizing that if you do
Sevilla
that, you're making Sevilla first. And you ask any Betico, would you rather Atleti or Barca Real Madrid win the league or Sevilla?
They will
tell you, I don't want Sevilla. You know, so I thought that was kind of funny.
It was
no
fun.
Goal.
Indeed.
The Premier League are contemplating a 24-hour social media blackout to raise awareness and help combat racism. Jules, your thoughts?
I mean, I think it's a really good thing. We saw championship clubs doing it, former players like Thierry Henry, current players as well, and something has to be done, Gab. This cannot continue.
Yeah. Use your leverage over the social media.
Yeah, and this
companies.
Is a good start. This is not enough, but this is a really good start. Make a stand and stick with it. And finally, Gab, I know you love the Ecuadorian League. Tell me about the Macara goalkeeper Joaquin Pucheta and what he did against Orense this weekend in the league.
He did what everybody, normal person, would do. They're 1-0 up, right? Yeah. Ball's at the other end of the pitch. Nobody's really looking at me because it's the Ecuadorian league. So I'll just go behind the advertising hoarding and relieve myself and urinate pitch side. The referee did notice, and he was sent off. This is the second story from South America.
Yeah, after that, Brazil.
Okay, at least this guy didn't go and wee all over himself like the Brazilian referee. But still, come on, guys. Y'all can do better than that. Right, that brings us to an end. Jules, how about we come back on Thursday?
Great idea.
Do this again. All right.
Yeah.
Y'all be there too. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.